Every substance known to man.
So the little irritant becomes a beautiful pearl. He winked at Ava and tapped her nose.
Are you calling me a little irritant?
He laughed, unable to help himself. She had always made him laugh. Yes, I am. A beautiful irritant.
Keep it up, and I will steal your fake leg, and you will have to hop back to the house.
You're so heartless, he said in mock horror.
A heartless irritant.
She swiped at him, and he blocked her easily, stealing her shell in the process. Thunder belched through the sky once more, not nearly as polite and distant as it had been before. Ava and Angelo, still bickering good-naturedly, quickly dressed and gathered their things. They weren't quick enough, though, and with a solid crack, the swollen skies suddenly split above them. Rain peppered the sand, and Ava squealed. Angelo couldn't run very well, and Ava wasn't inclined to let him get drenched alone, so they looked around for immediate shelter. Hand in hand, they struggled across the sand toward the trees and the little fisherman's shack that sat back from the shore. The lock was broken and the shack abandoned, though an old net and a rusty fishing pole still remained among the dust and the cobwebs. Clothes clung to limbs, black hair to burnished cheeks, and they tumbled, laughing, into the shack, the damp walls and the earthy darkness making the space feel more like a medieval dungeon used for torture than a respite from the storm. Ava picked up the pole in one hand and tossed Angelo the net, and within moments they were quarreling once more as they fenced, saying things like, "En garde," and "Feel my wrath," and "Take that, fool!" Ava made the mistake of lunging too deep, and Angelo easily swiped her sword away. "Surrender, knave," he said, with a sneering twist of his lips. His black curls were clinging to his forehead, and his blue eyes danced with Ava as she sashayed around him, pretending she was a skilled swordsman. She was laughing and relaxed, the old Ava, and his heart softened as he looked into her grinning face. She sensed the shift in his attention, and she fainted, as if to kneel, only to step forward and grab at his arm, pivoting as if to throw him over her shoulder in a move that was more ancient wrestling than fencing. He dropped his net and pulled her against him aggressively, her back to his chest, his forearm resting firmly beneath her breasts, one large hand wrapped around her ribcage. He had meant for it to be part of the game. Clearly, he hadn't thought. His body hugged hers from his chest to his thighs. Her hair brushed his face. Her female scent tickled his nose, and his mouth was poised at the silky whirl of her ear, ready to demand her surrender. They stood frozen for several long seconds, locked in the strange embrace, eyes closed, mouths slightly open, trying to breathe without movement, without sound, and growing lightheaded in the attempt. Ava's hands had risen to Angelo's arm when he pulled her to him, and she stood motionless against him, her hands gripping the hard length that held her hostage. She didn't dare say his name, didn't dare utter a sound. Surely it would break the spell. Then she felt his lips move ever so softly against the lobe of her ear, skim the uppermost edge of her jaw, then travel back again. Ava resisted the sweet shudder that slid down her spine, but Angelo felt the tremor and his lips left her skin. But he didn't pull away or loosen his arm. Ava slowly turned her head, feeling his breath mark a path across her cheek as she raised her face and lifted her chin. Then it was her breath tickling his cheek and warming his lips. Again they paused, muscles tensed, straining to feel everything, to miss nothing, and still not cross any lines. Their eyes stayed closed as they neared that line, stood toe to toe, and then stepped over it, into each other. Mouths touched, pressed, retreated, brushed, retreated.
pressed, sought,
then slid away. And still their eyes remained closed, denying everything. Eva turned as Angelo shifted, and the dance began again, the angle different, more direct, less accidental.
Accidental, innocent, sweet.
The words slipped through Angelo's foggy mind, and he nodded slightly. Yes, that was it. Innocent. With his mouth pressed against Eva's, that slight nod lifted Eva's full top lip, separating it from the lower one, and Angelo explored the space between them with an unintentional touch of his tongue. Unintentional, innocent, sweet. So incredibly sweet. Just like that kiss so long ago. But the sweetness pulled him under like Camilo's wine. Then he was drinking deeply, pulling every last drop from Eva's mouth, unable to stop. It was like nothing he'd ever tasted before, and she cradled his face, letting him sip away, slip away, lost in the flavor, the texture, the heady heat of her mouth on his. Then they opened their eyes. Dark and heavy met blue and blazing, and Angelo ached to close his eyes again, even as he lifted his mouth and dropped his hands from her body.
Eva,
he whispered, and his torment made her tremble.
Again, she pleaded, and her eyes begged. Again, Angelo.
Madonna, he breathed. Madonna, he pleaded.
But the lovely Madonna, mother of his precious Jesus, couldn't hold a candle to the Madonna before him. They moved as one, bodies coming back together, the renewed contact so welcome and wondrous that their sighs slid around them like a hushed hallelujah chorus. Then there was only pleasure and pressure, mouths and momentum, as one kiss grew and multiplied and became something new, something neither of them had known before. Outside, the storm abated, welcoming a rainbow of soft pastels reflected in silvery puddles that neither of them saw. Outside, Fabia called for them, telling them to come in for supper. But neither of them heard. Outside, the air chilled with the evening, but neither of them felt the cold. Outside, Camillo Rosselli worried, puffing on his pipe, wondering what the future would hold for the two young people who had always loved the other but didn't belong together. And as their fires were banked, they both smelled the smoke. They left the fisherman's shack with their virginities intact. But they didn't go inside to safety and sanity. Instead, they drifted up into the fragrant, rain-damp evergreen forest that stood sentry on one side of the vacation home. Unwilling to part, unable to stop touching, to stop kissing, to walk away from each other and into the place where separation would surely invite guilt and regret. At least for Angelo. When they finally parted and Eva tiptoed up to her room, drunk on love and dizzy with desire, smiling against the palm she pressed to her lips to keep from giggling, Angelo sat on the veranda and tried not to think at all. He too kept his hand pressed to his mouth. But it was not to keep from laughing. He could smell Eva on his fingers. His body tightened all over again and his breaths grew painful. He was in exquisite agony. He had never known such pleasure, and not just in her body and her skin. Not just in her mouth and her sweetness. Not just in the way she touched him and made him tremble. It was more than that. It wasn't pleasure. It was joy. He'd been warned about the dangers of the flesh. Seminarians were counseled extensively, cautioned endlessly, and threatened with their very souls when it came to bridling passions and denying every carnal impulse. But no one had told him he would be filled with this immeasurable joy. He felt close to tears, and it wasn't simply because he'd just fallen into the snare every seminarian secretly dreads and simultaneously dreams about. It was love that made each touch feel like redemption and each kiss feel like rebirth. Not lust, not pleasure. It was love that created joy. He'd known for a long time that he loved Ava, but he had never admitted to himself that he loved her the way a man loves a woman. He had never allowed himself to ruminate on the idea. He'd locked it away the moment he'd decided to marry the church and forsake all others.
Angelo.
Angelo dropped his fingers from his mouth as if he'd been caught with his hand in a cash register. Camillo stepped out onto the veranda and looked around, obviously expecting Ava to be out there too. When he saw that she wasn't, he eased himself into a chair to the right of Angelo and filled his pipe as if he had all the time in the world. It wasn't late, though Angelo and Ava had missed dinner. Everyone else was still awake inside the house, and low murmurs and tinkling laughter filtered out into the loamy air. Angelo hoped no one had noticed the length of time he and Ava had spent alone. Camillo puffed and purred, smoke billowing from his mouth in fragrant clouds. Angelo had always loved the smell of his pipe, and he closed his eyes briefly, letting the scent mingle with the salt and the sea, the evergreens and the rain, before he exhaled and then breathed in deeply once more, savoring the aroma.
"You might be our only hope, Angelo," Camillo said after a time.
Angelo had grown drowsy in the comfortable darkness, the inevitable adrenaline crash leaving him weak and loose-limbed.
"What do you mean, Camillo?"
Camillo had never allowed Angelo to call him anything else.
"You know, you could marry Ava and take her to America. You are an American citizen, and if she were your wife, you could get her out of Italy, out of Europe. You could make sure she is safe from what is coming."
Angelo was so stunned he could only sit, staring off into the darkness like it held a forest full of jesters, waiting to laugh at Camillo's incredible suggestion. He sat still for so long, with his face so blank, that Camillo leaned forward and peered into his eyes.
"She would never leave you,"
Angelo said finally, offering the only response that came to his mind.
"Ha!"
Camillo barked softly and puffed again, slumping back in his chair.
"I knew it."
"You knew what, Babbo?"
Angelo said, slipping and calling him by Ava's pet name.
"I knew you wouldn't pretend with me," he said. "You love Ava, and she loves you. You are a priest, and she is a Jew. And you are a poet,"
Angelo said mildly, though his heart was galloping.
Camillo laughed softly. "That I am, a great poet and philosopher. That is why I smoke this pipe. It gives me the look I desire."
"I am not a priest yet," Angelo murmured.
It was a silly thing to say. He had spent 9 years in the seminary. 9 years. And now he was in the final months of his training. His ordination had been scheduled.
"That's like a man who is betrothed, saying he is not yet married."
It was exactly like that, and Angelo had no response. He was too honest and too shell-shocked by the whole evening to play games. Camillo was right. He couldn't pretend. And reality was starting to penetrate the fog he'd been in. Angelo wasn't a stupid man. He wasn't blind, he wasn't deaf, he wasn't dumb. But he'd been a fool. He'd thought he could love Ava and not be in love with her. He'd thought he could be close to her and not be too close. He'd thought he could have Ava and have God, too. And he couldn't. He was not the exception. He was the rule. He was not St. George, slaying dragons for his god. He was simply Angelo Bianco, being slain by the wiliest serpent of all. Satan, flaming red with 7 heads and 10 horns, which John spoke of in his book of Revelation.
I still want to be a priest, Camillo,
he whispered, and his chest ached at the admission, as if he were betraying Eva. He was betraying Eva, just like he'd betrayed the church and betrayed himself. The last few hours had been the sweetest of his life, but they had not been his finest.
I know, Camillo said. I know you do. That is why you are sitting out here alone instead of somewhere with Eva. That is why you've spent all these years treating her like a sister and letting me treat you like a son.
You are my family,
Angelo said, emotion rising in his chest.
Yes. But you can still save her.
Camillo met his gaze with a frank expectation that confused Angelo all the more.
But I thought you meant
marriage? No. It's illegal, first of all. Catholics can't marry Jews, even though we've been marrying each other for decades in Italy. Even though Santino's Catholic uncle married my Jewish aunt 30 years ago.
He scoffed, disgusted. But he waved his hand in the air, dismissing his derision, as well as the mention of the convoluted family connection that had brought Santino and Camillo together in the first place. He continued.
And second, you're right. Eva wouldn't leave. It is a distinctly Jewish trait. We would rather die together than be separated from our loved ones.
He puffed his pipe, letting the silence cleanse his mental palate.
Ah, who knows? Maybe that isn't a Jewish trait. Maybe that is a human trait.
He waved his hand again.
Regardless, I know she will not leave me to save herself.
I don't understand, Camillo.
What do you want me to do?
Angelo hoped Camillo could tell him exactly, give him instructions, make the path ahead straight and narrow.
You are our only hope because you will be in a position to help many people, Angelo. The church is already helping refugees. Did you know that?
Angelo shook his head. The question was, how did Camillo know?
I have been looking for ways to help my father-in-law. I have been working with Delasem.
What?
Angelo had no idea what Delasem was.
The Delegation for the Assistance of Jewish Emigrants,
Camillo supplied.
There are growing networks, Angelo, and the Catholic Church is quietly assisting where they can. The Catholics may save our souls after all,
Camillo said, smiling around his pipe.
Or maybe just our lives. But I will settle for that much. What can I do?
The instructions seemed very vague.
With the threats of war, Ostrica's contracts have gone up tenfold. The government is our largest contractor. They don't pay well, but they buy huge volume. We are just happy they haven't taken the company in the name of the greater good. We specialize in fine handmade glass, but we invested in the machinery to do heavier industrial-grade glass when Mussolini started posturing, and the war looked like it was going to become inevitable. We are richer than we've ever been, and a large percentage is going to Delasem. I have even donated a large portion to the church, with the caveat that you are the trustee of the account and have a right to dictate where, within the organization of the church, that money goes. I would ask that you make sure that it goes to feed and hide refugees and those who are sheltering them. Can you do that? Will you do that for me?
How?
Angelo asked again.
Become a priest, just like you've always planned. And if worse comes to worst, use your connections to hide us. I need you to save our family, Angelo.
Eva lay awake all night, gloriously giddy, caught in the haze of remembered kisses, only to fall into a fierce depression when she contemplated the future. The last year had convinced her there were no happy endings, only happy interludes, and somehow the interludes made the endings even worse. She ended up falling asleep near dawn and slept until noon. She took a leisurely bath, dried and curled her hair, painted her toenails red, and finally slunk down the stairs at about 3 o'clock, certain that everyone would take one look at her and see her feelings stamped all over her face. She was terrified of that first glance with Angelo, because then she would know if he felt the same. Maybe she just wouldn't look at him at all. Fabia was in the kitchen, breading and frying sardines. Santino was fashioning some kind of hat decoration from the porcupine quills Angelo had found. And the rest of the family was gathered on the veranda, sipping lemonade laced with something stronger, enjoying the slightly cooler temperatures, courtesy of the previous night's storm. They all greeted Eva warmly, with no mention of her late morning or her absence at dinner the night before. Angelo wasn't on the veranda. She breathed a little easier as she wiggled beneath her father's arm on the porch swing, leaning against him and closing her eyes so she could avoid seeing Angelo if he eventually joined them. But it wasn't Angelo who made his way up the walk in late afternoon. It was not uncommon for the manager and his wife, an older couple who had always been unfailingly polite and welcoming, to stop in every now and then and check on their guests. They managed the whole row of beach houses for one of Italy's wealthiest families, though Eva could never remember which one. The couple was greeted warmly all around by the group gathered on the veranda. But the warm reception changed almost immediately into something cold and damp. The elderly man and his wife stood side by side in front of Camillo, as if they needed moral support to do the immoral deed.
"I am sorry, signore,"
the old man said.
"I know you have come here for many years, and we don't mind. We are happy to have you join us. But people are complaining. They recognize you from past years, and they know you are Jews. The new laws, you understand."
Camillo stared at the couple for a moment, disbelieving. Eva straightened, pulling away from him as he rose, clearly needing to face this unexpected assault on his feet.
"We will refund your money, of course,"
the woman added hastily. She extended an envelope to Camillo. He took it, opened it slowly, and looked at the lire inside. Eva could see his humiliation, and her own face grew hot with outrage. She reached out and took her father's hand. He stiffened briefly, then squeezed her fingers.
"I see,"
Camillo said slowly, calmly.
"When exactly would you like us to go?" "As soon as possible. You understand we don't want to lose more business or get in trouble with the carabinieri."
The man shrugged like it couldn't be helped.
"Eh? What else can we do?" "We will leave in the morning, then," Camillo said stiffly.
The old woman looked at her husband, and her husband looked back at Camillo.
"It would be better if you left tonight, signore."
The silence on the veranda felt like standing in front of a blazing furnace.
"It's a full day's trip back to Florence, and we have people in our party who are getting on in years,"
Camillo said softly but firmly.
"We were just about to sit down to a late lunch, and we will need to gather our things. We will leave in the morning."
The woman reached out and yanked the envelope from his hands.
"Then we will need this to cover our losses," she snapped. "And don't blame us if the carabinieri show up and throw you out. They won't be as nice as we have been."
The old man looked at his wife, his face reflecting the shock that Eva felt. The woman had grown hostile with very little provocation.
"I'm sure tomorrow will be fine,"
the old man said, backing off the veranda, his hat in his hands.
"Come now, Guida,"
he commanded his wife. His wife turned away, but she didn't return the envelope. When Angelo finally showed up and heard the news from his sobbing grandmother, he left the house again, slamming the front door with wall-trembling force. He'd stormed off to the manager's cottage, only to come back a half-hour later looking shaken and sick. No one asked him how the conversation had gone. He was as silent as the rest of them as they dined on Fabio's fried sardines, green salad, and tomatoes. From the frozen expressions and weary eyes all around the table, one would think the crucifixion was at hand and not simply the Last Supper. Eva didn't think anyone would appreciate her attempt at levity and kept her Catholic wordplay to herself. They packed their things in an embarrassed stupor and retired early, none of them wanting to talk about the aborted holiday. The next morning, they left the house as clean and tidy as they'd found it, and climbed into the hired cars that would take them and their luggage to the train station in Grosseto. Eva didn't want to look back. But as they pulled away, she found herself turning in her seat to see the house disappear around the bend. They wouldn't be coming back to Maremma Beach. There would be no more white sand vacations and fresh fish from the market in Grosseto. There would be no more stolen kisses. Of that she was almost certain. Those things were only memories now, and the memories had been tainted.
15 August, 1939. Confession. I am afraid of rejection. A rejected infant will often die, even if its basic needs are met. A rejected child will spend his whole life trying to please everyone else, and never please himself. A rejected woman will often cheat, just to feel desirable. A rejected man will rarely try again, no matter how lonely he is. A rejected people will convince themselves they deserve it, if only to make sense of a senseless world. I am convinced there is nothing worse for the human heart than rejection. But over the past year I have grown accustomed to it. I expect it, accept it, roll with it instead of against it. I hate this about myself. And sometimes I wonder where the old Eva has gone. The girl who had fire. The girl who secretly believed she could do anything, be anything, and love anyone. And then I remember. She was rejected. Eva Rosselli.
Chapter 5. Rome. Angelo wasn't expected back at the seminary for 3 more days, and he used the first 2 to visit with Monsignor Luciano in Rome. He confessed his feelings for Eva, told him of the intimacy they'd shared, and he asked him for counsel and absolution. The Monsignor gave both, but he didn't hide his dismay very well.
"There is no future in this, my son."
Angelo thought about Eva, her bright smile and laughing eyes, the way her mouth had felt beneath his. She loved him. He loved her. Surely there was a future in that. But Monsignor Luciano continued, as if he heard the doubt in Angelo's silence.
"Even if you didn't become a priest, she is a Jew, Angelo."
"Yes, she is."
"You can't marry a Jew."
"Because of the laws."
"Yes, but that isn't what I'm referring to. You are Catholic. You can't marry her because she isn't a believer."
"She believes in God."
Angelo felt the sting of affront, a desire to defend, even as he recognized what his mentor was saying to him.
"Which God?"
Monsignor Luciano pressed.
"Certainly not Jesus."
"Do you really think God is a God of conditions, Monsignor?"
Angelo found himself arguing.
"Maybe the only condition is love. Love for him, love for each other. She doesn't reject Jesus. She just doesn't know him."
Angelo tried to explain.
Are you confident that you could help her come to know him?
Monsignor Luciano probed. Angelo thought about that for a moment before coming to a conclusion.
I don't know, Father. Even if she accepted Jesus as her savior, I don't think she would be baptized.
Why?
Because she is Jewish.
Angelo threw up his hands, frustrated by his inability to find a better explanation.
It is her heritage. It is her history. It is more than religion. It is who she is, who her father is, who her ancestors were.
But it is not who you are,
Monsignor Luciano said quietly, folding his hands and looking at Angelo. Angelo reared back, almost as if he'd been slapped. He turned away from the Monsignor, not wanting him to see the reaction his words caused.
It was not who he was.
That was the crux of the matter. He was not Jewish. He'd been raised and loved by Jewish people, but he was not one of them. The hurt and rejection he had felt when his mother died and his father left him in Italy reared its scaly head and burned him all over again.
The church is the best place for you, Angelo. You won't be a burden.
His father's final words to his son. He was older and wiser now, and he could rationalize his father's decision and his grandparents' desires for him. But the feelings, the insecurity, had never gone away.
You know what is best, Angelo. You know what is right. Now you must go forward and not look back,
the Monsignor said, and Angelo could only nod. The church was the best place for him. Deep down, he believed it. Angelo didn't belong with Ava. It was not who he was. Angelo spent his final day of vacation back in Florence with Ava, trying to find a way to tell her nothing had changed and nothing could change. He took her to all his favorite places, trying to share his feelings, to explain what drove him. Instead, he ended up sounding like a tour guide in a city she already knew and loved. She was quiet, and he could feel her depression. The art and architecture didn't feed her spirit the way it fed his. He tried harder, pointing out a fresco there, a statue here, telling her what he loved and what he appreciated so she could appreciate it too. And little by little her face relaxed, and her smile came back as the art came to life. The only thing he wanted to show her inside the Palazzo del Bargello, amid the sprawling expanse of some of the world's greatest art, was Donatello's statue of young Saint George, shield in hand, eyes facing a threat no one else could see.
Padre Sebastiano brought a group of us here about 2 years after I came to Italy. This one statue changed everything for me. I couldn't look at anything else. The rest of the group moved on, but I couldn't move. Another priest saw me staring at the statue, and he told me the story of San Giorgio and the dragon.
He relayed the tale that had moved him, altered his thinking, and redirected his life. As he talked, Ava's eyes were fixed on the sculpture, like she could almost imagine how he had looked, standing there all those years ago, a boy who wanted to be a saint.
He risked everything, Angelo said as he finished the story. And even though he died for his beliefs, he lives on because of them too.
He met Ava's gaze then, and her eyes were sad. Maybe she saw the truth, and it hurt her.
After that, Don Luciano, the priest I met that day, kept tabs on me and even sent a letter to the seminary, asking for periodic updates on my schooling and progress. Don Luciano is now in Rome. He is a Monsignor. I am hoping I will be able to learn alongside him at some point.
It was his fondest wish. In the Piazza del Duomo, they stood in front of the bronze baptistry doors, and he pointed out the life of Christ, so painstakingly illustrated, engraving after engraving, panel after panel.
The first time I saw these, I could only stare. It was like being in love, when your eyes can't look away without instantly wanting to go back.
He breathed, his voice an awed whisper. But Ava just nodded, her eyes on his face instead of the baptistry doors. Angelo turned away from the baptistry.
Now to Santa Croce.
Santa Croce, too?
Ava asked, groaning as if she were five. She was teasing, but beneath her banter was a growing despondence. The more they saw, the wider the gulf between them grew. They walked the short distance, a few city blocks between the Duomo and the Basilica, their conversation mild in the August heat. The forecast had threatened rain, but the sky was cloudless, the breeze non-existent.
"Have you been inside?"
he asked as they began to cross the Franciscan Basilica's lengthy piazza.
"Yes, on school outings, and once with Uncle Felix. He made me play my violin outside, remember? I drew a crowd. He was quite pleased with me that day."
"I do remember. You told me all about it. You were quite pleased with yourself, too, if I remember right."
Ava always came alive in front of a crowd. And when she'd told Angelo about the numbers she'd drawn, he had wished more than anything he could have heard her play.
"Playing for an audience is a million times better than playing alone," she said,
confirming his thoughts.
"Well, I love Santa Croce. It's charming, less intimidating."
Angelo winked at Ava, and she just shook her head and sighed. He studied the towering white edifice ahead of them, the arched doorways, the intricate carvings, the height crowned with several crosses and a blue six-sided star that made him think of the ugly yellow stars some of Camilo's refugees had worn on their clothing. The reminder depressed him. Thank God Italy had not resorted to pinning labels on her Jews.
"Less intimidating," Ava countered doubtfully.
She rubbed her head, and he could have sworn he heard her whimper. He was invigorated by the art, but Ava seemed overwhelmed by it all. Or maybe it was him. Maybe he depressed her.
"Catholicism is so ornate," she said,
trying to take it all in.
"That is one of the things I love about it. It's complicated and beautiful, and there's nothing easy about it. Everything is symbolic. Ritualistic. Like a beautiful woman, it makes you work."
Ava harumphed.
"What do you know about beautiful women?"
"I grew up with one. I think I know plenty."
"Ha!" she laughed.
He was trying to be sweet, though he was also being truthful.
"I'm not complicated, Angelo."
"You are to me."
He eyed her briefly, then looked away.
"No. You make me that way. You are far more complicated than I'll ever be. I'm not sure what drives you. I have never been able to understand your passion for..."
"God,"
he finished her sentence.
"No, I don't think your passion is for God, exactly. I think your passion is for ascension."
Angelo could only stare at her in stupefaction.
"Ascension?"
he asked, incredulous.
"You aren't hungry for power. You aren't hungry for riches. You aren't hungry for women, or fun, or music, or pleasure."
"Am I really so bland?"
He laughed at himself, and Ava laughed too, but she pressed her point.
"You are hungry for purpose, for meaning, for martyrdom, or maybe just sainthood."
"I think you just described the ambitions of every good priest,"
he said, strangely relieved.
"Yes, I did, didn't I?"
Ava looked a little stunned.
"Why are synagogues so plain, do you think? Is it because Judaism is much more bare, simplistic?"
It was Angelo's turn to search for the right word. Ava thought for a moment.
"They aren't all plain. But unlike Catholicism, a religion that has had unfettered centuries to decorate..."
She shot him a wry look.
You only need the Torah and 10 Jewish males to have a synagogue. The rest can be cobbled together. My father says it's because Jews, as a people, have had little chance to settle. We are always on the move. The Exodus never ends. We have been unable to make roots. So our roots are in our traditions, our families, our children.
Angelo could see Eva suddenly struggling with her emotions, and he reached for her hand. Her tears made him want to tear at his clothes and pull at his hair. He hated to see her pain. He hated the terrible injustice of it all, and he could only watch helplessly as she fought for her composure.
It's happening again, Angelo. All over again. The Exodus.
He could only nod, agreeing. But then she looked up at him, and her eyes were fierce, glittering with anger and unshed tears.
Our rituals are all about our children. So different from Catholicism, where they take a man and ask him to make vows that deprive him of his roots, of children, of family. There will be no descendants of Angelo Bianco. Your tree ends with you.
Angelo shook his head. But he didn't bother to defend the church or himself. Eva was angry, and she had a right to be. The anger and the hurt and the longing for things to be different, both in the world and with them, was like a tangled ball of string, interwoven and indistinguishable. He understood that. And in a way, he felt it, too. Angelo didn't think Eva blamed him for the way things were. But she did blame him for the way things could never be.
I didn't come here to see Santa Croce. It is wonderful, but some other time. Come on.
Angelo released Eva's hand and gripped her elbow, tugging her toward the picturesque cloisters to the right of the massive church. They worked their way around until they stood at the columned entrance of the renowned Pazzi Chapel.
Filippo Brunelleschi's Pazzi Chapel, famed for its Renaissance architecture.
Eva parroted. She was Florentine, after all. And Camillo Rosselli was her father, a man who valued learning above all else. But Angelo was pretty sure she'd never seen beyond the exterior.
Very good. Now, come inside and sit with me, he demanded.
She followed obediently, stepping into the quiet chapel. She was clearly expecting more extravagance, more opulence. Instead, Angelo watched as her face softened and her chest rose and fell, deeply at first, as if she couldn't find her breath. Then her hand rose to her chest, and she left it resting there, as if her heart had attempted to break out and fly up into the soaring, simplistic beauty of the domed interior.
"You like it," he said, more than a little pleased.
He led her to the stone bench that lined the walls beneath the long windows and the arched pilasters that made up the rectangular perimeter of the room. Angelo sat down with a sigh, stretching his legs out before him, his hand rubbing absently at his knee. There was always a little pain when he wore the prosthetic, like a shoe that rubs in all the wrong places. He didn't mind the pain for the most part. It reminded him of his weaknesses and made him thankful for his strengths.
This is where the monks of Santa Croce would have sat once upon a time. This was a meeting room, a chapter house, he softly explained to Eva.
They were alone in the chapel, but the space demanded reverence.
I wonder how the violin would sound in here,
Eva mused, her eyes on the light that poured through the oculus at the top of the dome overhead.
Wonderful. This space with you on the violin? Paradise,
Angelo said, wishing he could hear it. The strain he'd felt between them all day had dissipated at the chapel doors, and they sat in companionable silence.
The plan of Brunelleschi's chapel is the circle and the square, a rectangular base with a conical central dome. Every space is divided geometrically. The dimensions are mathematical. Every proportion is perfect.
Everything is in harmony. Nothing is superfluous. The white plaster of the walls, the gray stone pilasters, even the glazed terracotta circular paintings are mellow, serene, and balanced, he explained in hushed tones.
I can feel that, Ava said, nodding. I like it here.
She paused, and then added with incredulity,
I've lived my whole life in this city. How have I not been inside this chapel before?
You were born in Florence. You take it for granted. But I was born in New Jersey. It is not exactly known for its art. Even as a boy, and a pretty sad, homesick boy at that, I recognized that this city was special. If you look down on Florence from the hills surrounding her, you see the domes, the bell towers, the medieval castle ramparts, and it's almost as if no time has passed at all. Like the Renaissance is still in full swing, there is a sense of timelessness, of being transported back 500 years when chapels like this were being built.
You've climbed the hills. I haven't even climbed any hills,
Ava teased.
You doubt me?
Angelo smiled and tapped his prosthetic leg with his cane.
No,
she smiled too.
I think you were born with half a leg so the rest of us could keep up.
Ah, Ava, spoken like a true sister.
I'm not your sister, Angelo,
she said softly, and he didn't argue. Funny how they both employed or rejected the familial relationship when it suited their own purposes. But he needed to confess something, and he couldn't wait any longer.
Ava.
Yes.
There was fear in her voice.
Do you remember a year ago, in the Jewish cemetery, when you told me that Camillo worried that I had been pushed into the seminary, coerced a little?
Ava nodded.
I didn't want to admit it then. I was afraid if I admitted it, you wouldn't let it go. But your father was right.
Ava's eyebrows shot up at the admission, but he continued lightly, determined to get it all out.
Before he left me here, my father told me what was expected of me. He told me my uncle had made inquiries and recommendations, and that I would be entering the seminary. He reassured me I would be cared for and taught. He told me that because of my leg, physical work, the kind he did, wouldn't be an option for me, and the church was the best place for me. It will be hard for you to provide for a family, Angelo. Your duty is to be able to provide for yourself and not be a burden to others.
Angelo quoted softly.
He said that.
Ava's cheeks pinked, and her hands clenched in outrage.
He did, he said, nodding. Forgive him, Ava. I have.
You could have been anything you wanted to be, Angelo. You still can.
Ah, there she is again. The girl who thinks I can walk on water.
I'm Jewish, Angelo. I don't think anyone can walk on water.
He shook his head at her irreverent humor and smiled in spite of himself.
When I'm here, I feel like I can simply immerse myself in space. All my life I have been physically imbalanced because of my leg, but in here, everything makes sense. Everything is simple. My mind and body are in harmony. There is balance.
But you can't live here, she said.
Angelo thought her intention was probably to tease, but her voice sounded plaintive.
No, I can't. But I can do my best to carry that peace inside of me. That sense of purpose. I didn't want to be a priest in the beginning, Ava. But I have come to believe it is what God wants for me. I started to believe it the day I saw St. George. I don't know how, and I don't know why, but I have to defeat my own dragons. We all do. This is the way I will defeat mine.
Ava's face was pale, and Angelo could see her pulse hammering at her throat. His own pulse pounded in his head, and he felt a bead of sweat trickle down his spine under the shirt he wore beneath his seminarian's robes.
The art I've shown you today is old, ancient, but the art centers on one thing. It is the story of Christianity. And that gospel is a living, breathing thing, still inspiring and moving men and women today. It is the thing that separates us from chaos, from selfishness, from being lost. It is the breather of hope and the light in the dark. It has always been enough for me, more than enough. I fell in love with the Catholic Church through the art. Then I was asked to give my life to her. It was easy for me, don't you see? When you love someone that completely, you will do anything for them. I feel that way about the church and about God.
He hesitated briefly, and then, with a deep breath, said,
"And I feel that way about you."
Ava's eyes snapped to Angelo's, and he saw a flash of joy in their deep brown depths before it flickered out with the realization that there was more. He wasn't finished.
"I would do anything for you, Ava. Anything."
He thought of what Camillo had said about not only blessing lives but saving Jewish lives, and it gave him the strength to continue.
"But I can't have you and the church.
I need the church, Ava. I need the church, and I believe the church needs me."
She didn't respond. Not at all. Not a glance or a sigh. Not a word.
"Ava."
The question was soft. But he knew. He could feel it between them. Dark, thick, slippery.
"Dangerous."
She turned and raised her eyes to his. His breath caught in his throat as he rose stiffly from the stone bench and stepped away. He had to step away from her.
Dear God, what had he done?
She didn't just love him. She was in love with him. And he was unable to give himself to her. The truth he'd been skirting rose in his chest like spilled oil, dark, thick, slippery.
Dangerous.
He took several steps away, turned, and walked back. She rose to meet him. Her eyes shone and her lips trembled.
"Kyrie eleison. Lord, have mercy. Christe eleison. Christ, have mercy." "I can't," he whispered.
"You can," she whispered back, almost pleading, abandoning all pretense.
For a moment, he let the possibility pull at him again.
Could he?
He shut his eyes and tried to imagine walking away from the church. His father's words echoed in his head.
"You belong in the church. It is the best place for you. Your job is not to be a burden."
He pushed the words away, but Camillo's voice rose up as well, and the chorus was deafening.
"You will be in a position to do so much good. Save my family."
And finally, Monsignor Luciano's parting salvo.
"It is not who you are, Angelo."
"I can't, Ava,"
he said more firmly.
"I won't,"
he added, his voice harsh. He would be strong. He would not lose the battle in this moment, not even for Ava.
"You already have."
Her voice was mild, but the pain was sharp, making her mouth twist wryly. She mocked herself, and the agony in her face echoed in his chest. She was reflected in him and he in her. It had always been that way. When she was in front of him, she was the only thing he could see. She filled his vision. But his eyes were single to a different glory. He closed them briefly and took a deep breath. When he opened them again, only steel remained.
"It was wrong, Ava. On so many levels. You know it.
I know it. Neither of us can afford to let it happen again. It won't happen again.
He kept his hands clenched at his sides, holding himself firm.
I love you, Angelo.
The last truth, and maybe the only truth that really mattered.
And I love you,
he shot back. The truth was terrifying to him, but not as terrifying as turning from the only course he truly believed in.
But not enough.
More than anyone I've ever loved before.
But not enough,
she repeated.
We are only as good as the promises we keep, Eva. And I've made a promise. You don't want a man who can't keep his promises, do you?
Their eyes caught and held, and he saw the moment she believed him. He recognized her defeat, saw her acceptance. He saw Eva, the little girl who had always given in to his whims and followed his lead. She knew he wouldn't yield. Unyielding Angelo, she'd called him. She'd told him once that his virtue was as disheartening as it was admirable. He didn't feel virtuous at the moment. She nodded then, an acknowledgement, an acquiescence. A muscle in his jaw jumped and his lips firmed. Without a word, he held out his arm, but she wouldn't take it.
Please just go, Angelo. Just go,
she whispered.
I want to walk you home. I need to see that you are safe.
I need you to leave me now.
Her voice grew stronger.
I won't do that,
he insisted, willing her to yield once more.
You already have,
she said again. And when her eyes rose to his, the little girl was gone.
Go, Angelo.
It was his turn to yield. With a heavy heart, he turned and left the quiet chapel, knowing this time and forevermore, Eva wouldn't be following.
1940. 10 June, 1940. Confession. I still love my country, even after what she has done. Italy has not been loyal to her Jews, but in my heart, bruised and betrayed as it is, I am still Italian, and my soul quakes at the thought of what is to come for my country, even if she has rejected me. We are officially at war. Italy invaded France and simultaneously declared war on Great Britain. No more rumors or threats. No more posturing and pounding of chests. Italy is at war, allied with Germany. We are allied with a country led by a man who hates Jews. I wonder how many men, how many Jews will have to die for Hitler to declare himself the winner. Germany already invaded Denmark and Norway, rolling over them without mercy. Belgium surrendered in only 18 days. Next is France. When England falls, there will be no one left to stop them. America wants no part in the war. I want no part in it either. Jews are not allowed to fight anyway. Non-Italian Jews resent us for it. Impromptu work orders are popping up all over the city, run by the fascist police. Jewish men and boys, and sometimes women, too, can be randomly pulled from their homes or off the street to shovel gravel or dig ditches or move bricks from one place to another. It is our patriotic duty, the fascists say. They say it is the least we can do, as if we made the laws that banned us from military service. Better banned than forced to fight with Hitler, I suppose. But it feels wrong to sit by while others fight, even if they die for terrible things. Angelo has banned me too. Banned me and abandoned me, just like Italy. Last November he was ordained to the priesthood, and I haven't seen him since. Eva Rosselli. Chapter 6. Shiva.
2 days after Italy entered the war, Camillo interrupted Eva and Felix in the music room, and the desperate look in her father's eyes had Eva's palms sweating and her heart racing.
There are immigration officials here, Felix.